Hi, welcome back. Glad to see y'all. Mask, 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 mask. Looks like we're all masked. Lecture 3, January 25. Lecture notes page, if you have it, and you should. 28. Before I get started, any quick questions, issues, problems for me? How many people have taken mini test 1? Webbies? How many people haven't taken mini test 1? How many people know what I'm talking about when I ask you about mini test 1? Okay, so mini test 1 due tonight, 11:59 p.m. Don't forget to take it, please. Currently 616 students, 157 in the class. I'm not sure if everybody's here or not. And 459 on the web. Face coverings, you know you're required, and as long as I stay 6 feet away from you, I don't have to, and I prefer not to for this purpose of lecturing. We know, try not to sit in the aisle seats or the front rows, unless we've talked about it, because it keeps our distance. Mini test 1 closes tonight, 11:59 p.m. So, this is goofy. Some things about Canvas everybody loves. Some things about Canvas people don't like. What people don't like? The gradebook. It sucks. Can I say that even though it's our stuff? The gradebook sucks. So, in order to show you when things are due, I have to put in a due date. But we have two examples of each exam. Standard time, extended time. As soon as the test closes, for the test you're not supposed to take. If most people are standard time, extended time is going to show missing. And then a bunch of you can write me and say, how come it's missing? Because you weren't supposed to take that one. If the one you're supposed to take, standard time, is missing, you missed the exam. That's a problem. But as soon as it closes, we're going to see a bunch of people seeing missing. If you see missing, double check. Are you missing the one you're supposed to take? That's a problem. The other one, the extended time, it's not your problem. Okay? That's just the way it works. So, an issue. We know about marketing the news, unless you're here for the first time. Business in the news and marketing the news. Test 1 on the mini test. Here comes the first business in the news. This was great. I love it when the world posts stuff just as we need it. Remember us talking about we're going to be at the 30,000 foot level above what we do every day, the strategic level. Boom! Here's the 30,000 foot level of strategic planning. Activision is being acquired by Microsoft. Who are my video gamers here? Who cares about this stuff? Maybe a third of us? So, in a deal worth $68.7 billion, Microsoft agreed to buy Activision Blizzard for $68.7 billion in an all-cash deal that would add all blockbuster game franchises, including Call of Duty players, and World of Warcraft. I personally lost 3 years of my life to World of Warcraft before... It wasn't funny, it was sad, before I broke the addiction one day. To an already impressive lineup that includes Minecraft. So we're seeing here corporate growth strategy, right? Of course, it influences marketing. Their cost of acquisition, $68.7 billion, and expanding their product line to these other hit games. This acquisition will accelerate the growth of Microsoft's gaming business across mobile, PC, console, and cloud, and will provide building blocks for the metaverse, enabling the company to compete better with Meta, Facebook's parent company. So here's our strategy to combat the competition, yeah? The transaction would make Microsoft the world's third largest gaming company by revenue, behind China's Tencent and Japan's Sony Group. So we're gaining market share, market size, market strength, a big deal to businesses. Satya Nadella, chairman and CEO of Microsoft, says we're investing deeply in world-class content, community, and the clouds, ushering a new area of gaming that puts players and creators first and makes the gaming safe, inclusive, and accessible to all. So we're investing in our relationships, which we've been talking about, with our vendors, creators, customers. When the deal closes, Microsoft will have 30 internal game development studios, along with additional publishing and esports production capabilities. Gaming is an area of increasing focus for marketers and advertisers, and esports, which has gained massive appeal as a spectator sport. How many of you guys watch esports? Quite a few. Also presents many opportunities. So later on, and you probably already heard in management about SWOT analysis, strength, weakness, opportunities, and threats. Here's Microsoft at the 30,000 foot strategic level saying, what's out there that's an opportunity for us? Acquiring Activision, does it play to one of our strengths? You bet it does. Let's go for it to expand our business. So matching opportunities with strengths. Mobile is the largest segment in gaming, with nearly 95% of all players globally participating on mobile. Very cool. normally I only have three stories because you only have so much patience with me as I get excited about these things. This next one are two short stories about two different brands that are adjusting to environmental factors that are changing over time. A while ago, I haven't checked in with students in maybe 10 years, in high school, and maybe still now, in high school, were kids still chewing tobacco? Is that still a thing? Yeah. Okay, so it's still a thing for a sub-segment of the marketplace. Some of you may be still chewing tobacco, right? Not now, dude. By the way, put on a mask. Smile, nod, and put your mask up. You too, sir. See, that's a danger being noticed. You nod and I notice you. All right, so Red Man Chewing Tobacco rebranding to be America's Best Chew. Another brand bites the sensitivity dust, adapting to cultural changes, crest values, competition, regulation, legal and political, economic, social changes, and technology. I think we talked about crest factors last time. Here is a change in the social attitudes. Swedish Match AB is removing the iconic Red Man name and Native Man image from its 135-year-old brand of chewing tobacco. It will now be called America's Best Chew, which has been its tagline all along. It was Red Man, America's Best Chew. And the logo and the packaging is going to change as well, so they're rebranding a bit. Swedish Match worked diligently over the past several months to make changes in response to our heightened awareness and our desire to be more inclusive. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hosick Jr. and Fawn Sharp, President of the Nation National Congress of American Indians, says, we praise this move. So there we see a brand change based on what? Changing cultural values, changing social norms, yeah? Then what other brands do you know have been changed recently because of cultural sensitivity issues? I don't know if you guys know a baseball team north of here called the Cleveland Guardians. And you may know they just released their official hat, gear, and logo. So another company influenced by this change in social norms. Second one being influenced by these changes outside the organization is Martini and Rossi, their vermouths. 100 years ago, when we had prohibition at the government level in the U.S., no alcohol was legal, Martini and Rossi launched its first three non-alcoholic vermouths in sweet, sparkling, and dry variants. So that was, at the time, the impact of regulation, political factors on marketing. That's the R of Crest. Now, in response to the recent rise in sober, curious consumers and a heightened desire for mindful cocktails worldwide, Martini Rossi has taken the same wines used in its vermouths, removed the alcohol, infused them with botanicals, and for a soft launch of two non-alcohol aperitivos. Floreal with notes of chamomile and Vibrante, I don't know, with notes of bergamot oranges. So impact of consumer taste on marketing this place against social taste changes. The brand pointed to data showing that 58% of people globally are drinking more non-alcoholic and low-alcohol cocktails in comparison to a year ago. So this is the idea of marketing research, which we'll talk about later, impacting us, our brand, and what we're doing as consumer taste change. Yeah. Finally, I try not to obsess over Super Bowl commercials, so all three aren't about the Super Bowl, but I can't let it go. It's a thing in marketing, yeah? State Farm picks TikTok over TV in their Super Bowl ad shuffle. State Farm aired its first ever Super Bowl in commercial in 2021. Let's see if you remember this one or not from a year ago.
Hey, Rogers, look, I'm you.
Jake from State Farm. You couldn't find a standard that looked anything like me?
Have you seen mine?
It's like looking in a mirror, right?
Now that one makes sense.
Look, guys, I don't even have a stand-in.
Of course you do.
Hold on, is that Drake?
That's right. Drake from State Farm.
Like a good neighbor. Like a good neighbor.
Stand-ins don't have lines.
Oh, okay.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Now, whether or not you remember it, liked it, found it funny or not, it gave the company a big bump a year ago. But instead of splurging on guest appearances by Drake and Paul Rudd, as it did last year, the insurance provider is foregoing a traditional Super Bowl ad in favor of the hashtag Team State Farm TikTok Challenge. How many of you guys are active on TikTok? Really? Only that many? I don't know if you guys are being honest or not. The campaign uses Jake from State Farm Characters, a talent scout evaluating video submissions on the platform. So we're using social media, we're getting consumers' attention and involvement with a contest on a platform that's certainly well used, TikTok.
You ever wanted to be in a commercial with me? Well, Team State Farm is looking for new talent and I'm holding tryouts. So duet this video, show me what you got, and we'll let TikTok decide who'll be in the next commercial. So get your head in the game, neighbor. Catch. Good. I'm just checking up on your reflexes. Now, what kind of talents would you bring to Team State Farm? Go. Okay. That's big neighbor vibes right there. What? Stars born. Wow. Impressive. We're going to be in touch.
Okay, we'll be in touch. I've seen better on TikTok, but that's the route they've decided to go. Users are asked to share their talents, no football skills required, with TikTok to duet feature and use of the hashtag State Farm hashtag. On February 13th, Super Bowl Sunday, the three best videos will be pinned to the top of Jake's TikTok page. Users will then pick the winning video by liking their favorites. So we're seeing social media in marketing, getting consumer involvement in marketing. State Farm is focused on TikTok to meet the next generation of consumers by showing up where they're spending their time and in spaces they're interested in. Good idea, State Farm. There's an increase in Gen Z and millennial auto insurance spending last year and a dip in baby boomer and Gen X insurance buys. State Farm is using TikTok to keep pace with an emerging market. So here's the importance of understanding consumers' media exposure habits. What media are they in? What are they paying attention to? And cohort spending, Gen X, millennial, baby boomers, Gen Z, these are all things called age generational cohorts. We'll talk about that later on. And they vary in their habits, what they watch, and how they're spending their money. With TikTok hitting over 1 billion monthly active users, it's no longer a niche platform. It's taking more for brands to stand out. This is the first time State Farm has used an interactive social media presence, either on TikTok or during the NFL playoffs and the big game. However, the insurer's brief time on TikTok has already resulted in more than 200,000 followers for Jake from State Farm. That's good coverage. That's good awareness. The insurer said it's just the first step towards a broader expansion into the TikTok platform. So we're adapting our promotional strategy to changing consumer tastes, including using TikTok. By tapping into the creative TikTok community, we see this activation as a chance for State Farm to show up in a dynamic and completely unexpected way while further sharing our good neighbor values. So we're getting consumers' attention, building interest, building awareness, and here we're making use of the brand motto about good neighbor, okay? So those are marketing in the news for the day. Marketing is everywhere. So we pick up with Lectionode's page 28, the top of page 15 of the textbook. Continue with chapter 1, creating customer relationships and value through marketing. So I should pause. I don't do it very often. Any questions, issues, or thoughts on anything we just heard? Web-based? Oh, you're off TikToking. Great. All right. So, well, they could be. All right. So last time we are working our way through this idea of creating value and relationships with marketing. And what we paused on was this idea of the evolution of philosophies of marketing. We didn't come to where we are today from the get-go. So let's take a look at the evolution of marketing management philosophies. This is ideas, strategy, terminology, concepts at work. So we start with the production era. This is going back a fair number of ways as it first came out, all the way back to the beginning of the last century, when the focus was on the idea that, geez, right now, until we get into the Industrial Revolution in big time, products are not really available. If you lived in a small town, a rural community, or even in a city before this revolution, products had to be custom made. There was no big factory production of things. And relatively speaking, unless you made it at home, they were fairly expensive. So this new idea came out. Let's get involved in a way of producing products that are available, highly affordable. It implies that management should focus on improving the production operating efficiencies to get products that are available and highly affordable. It's useful when demand exceeds the supply, which is true in some industries today. It's not like it's no longer relevant anywhere. It's true in some industries today. Or when the product cost is too high. There's a basic premise in operations management, management in general, that the longer your production runs of any unit, of anything you make, the lower and lower the unit cost gets. You get economies of scale, you get the experience in building it, there's less waste. So the unit costs drop down over time. So if your product's too expensive and you can, and there's demand for it, have longer production runs, you're driving down the unit cost. That's the focus on this. So the classic example, which I assume may have left to your mind, Henry Ford and the Model T, right? The old classic saying was you could get the Model T in any color you wanted as long as that color was black, thank you. And the notion was we didn't make it in green and yellow and orange and puce, and we didn't have convertibles and hardtops and four doors. And we made the same thing over and over and over again in vast volumes, driving the price down. It was an amazing idea at the time that people on the production line could actually afford the thing they were making. Wow. So obviously it worked pretty good for him at the time, and still for some businesses today. We shift. This is a little, by the way, I try to cue you when I recognize we're being a little different than a textbook. This is a little different than the textbook. So when the question says, in class we heard, or in lecture we heard, that's a cue. The product error. This assumes that consumers want products that offer the most quality, the most performance, the most features. Engineers love this, man. They love adding stuff to products to make them cooler, more features, more thingies, the latest technology. This implies that the firm management should focus on continual improvements of the product. But it places the focus on the product, not on the consumer per se. Anybody think of a major company today that constantly seems to be focused on the product and continuous improvement over and over of the product? Anything come to mind? Yell it out. Apple and its iPhone. What iPhone are we on? I've lost track. iPhone blah blah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. X or 10, I forget what it was. I don't know what we're up to now. We're on which? 12, okay. 12 or 13, we can't even keep track anymore. Is the consumer at the heart of every one of these changes, or is it technology and innovation? And sure, consumers might or might not like it. It's a focus on the product. Now, they're successful, it works for them, yeah? So it works for them. This is a classic example that I love from a long time ago. Casio, you know the name Casio as a brand? No, some people do. Casio was early on in the idea of calculators. They came up early in the days when, well, first there were four-function calculators. You no longer needed to have a big machine on your desk pushing and pulling a lever. You could carry it around. Four functions. Then they got more functions. That was useful stuff. And then Casio said, some engineer says about Casio, let's make it play music. We can make beautiful music together. There was a time when neither one of us knew what a melody was, but the Casio ML90 musical calculator has changed all that with 13 pre-programmed tunes. We can now make beautiful music with the best of them. This was not MP3 quality music. This was like beep, 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 beep. Do you think most people buying a calculator really needed, wanted, and desired beep, 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 beep? Engineers thought it was a great idea. This was not a huge seller. Technology, the focus on the product sometimes produces stuff that nobody really wants. Isn't a great marketing idea, but okay. Then, and now, you may have heard that Microsoft ditched their Snapchat-like highlights feature from Skype. It was a focus on the product, not on what the consumer was looking for. So we still sometimes focus on the product instead of asking, what does the consumer need, want, or desire? And then we have to backtrack. In 2018, we explored some design changes, heard from customers that we overcomplicated some of our core scenarios. Calling became harder to execute, and highlights didn't resonate with the majority of users. Out. You might have saved some money if you'd asked a few users first, I'm just saying, but a focus on the product. So the product concept, okay? Sales era. This era, this management philosophy about marketing assumes consumers will not buy enough product unless there's a strong sales and promotional effort. You can almost picture this happening every time in the last century, maybe as we came on the Depression era. Folks were not buying stuff without a bit of a sales push. They couldn't afford it, but whatever they were going to buy, maybe they needed to push them on it. Still relevant today sometimes, but it's useful for unsought goods, things we don't really think of or want. And it's useful in industries where we have overcapacity. Their situation is that they've got to sell what they make rather than make what the consumer wants. We're stuck. We've got to make this stuff. It's all we can do. Hey, you, go sell this. So, sales era. We move on in time. Philosophy changes a little bit. We come up with the marketing concept era, a little bit closer to modern times. It assumes that achieving the organization's goals depends on determining and satisfying consumers more effectively and efficiently than the competition. In the marketplace, if you can find a niche where you can satisfy the consumers more effectively and efficiently than does your competition, you got a win coming. You're going to do okay. You're going to take their customers away from them. An organization should seek to make a profit by serving the needs of different customer groups, different target markets, different market segments, all words we'll use. So that's what we're thinking about with the marketing concept. One of our guest video speakers out at Timken on how in a B2B world, Timken creates value for their customers. I forget which click works best for me.
In our vision of the Timken company, it's all about creating value for customers and improving customer performance. For what that means in my part of the business is helping customers improve performance of their products. So if it's a company that's doing mining, one of the things that's critical for their business is uptime of equipment. If equipment is down unexpectedly, it's a big deal, costs thousands, millions of dollars. And so one of the things we do is try to improve the performance of their equipment and extend the life of their equipment. For some customers, it means productivity gains. And so we are growing in the service part of our business where we're helping customers increase uptime of critical assets. And so we'll go in with equipment and technology and knowledge to help those customers recognize when a critical piece of equipment might fail due to a bearing failure or some other component and tell them that in advance, so they can plan maintenance and reduce unexpected outages. So that's a couple of examples of how we try to create value for customers. It's more than just selling them product. It's more about helping them improve their performance.
And so you could picture a situation where they were focused on making the best bearing in the world. That's what they want to do, focus on the bearing. They say, wait a minute. It's beyond just the bearing. We can provide value to our customers who will pay us money to provide this service of uptime of equipment. If you can save your client firm money, you have their attention, or increase the revenue, et cetera. But they can do that for them. They're providing value beyond just the product, and people are willing to pay for things they value. So that's how they think about it over at Timken. So the marketing concept, my shorthand of it, you've heard me say it already before several times, I'll say it many more times, the discovery and satisfaction of consumers' needs, wants, and desires, at a profit or to attain the organizational's goals if we're not for profit, through an integrated effort of the firm. All the pieces of the firm have to work together, the four P's, the marketing mix, the organization overall, the production folks. We have to be pulling the same way to make this work and to satisfy that consumer. We good? So this is Michelle Skin. Michelle works for a not-for-profit organization. She's going to talk to us about how she thinks about this idea of satisfying the consumer in a not-for-profit scenario.
I can't emphasize enough understanding motivation and understanding what the consumer wants. It is not about the needs of the hospital. It's not about the direction of the organization. It's what's the direction of the consumer? Who's going to use that service? Who's going to purchase that product? And what's their motivation? And how can you tap into that?
So let's ask ourselves this question. You work for a not-for-profit organization. You're a fundraiser for a hospital. And you're asking yourself, what is the consumer's motivation to donate? Somebody think on it. Give me one motivation. I want to be sure in a very philanthropic, very socially responsible way that your patients or the patients at our local hospital have the best care. So I'm going to donate to your cancer wing to make sure they have really good care. Yeah? Is that a motivation? And you can think how you might talk to a potential donor, if that's your motivation, about what you could do with your money to help people be better. What else would be a different motivation? What else might a donor be willing to, yeah? What selfish reason can you think of? I would really like people to recognize me, so I'm going to donate money for the Marks Maternity Ward at our local hospital. People know who I am, won't they? Okay, so you may have an egotistical, selfish reason for donating. Would you talk to that person the same way as somebody who wants to help people to do better in the hospital? No, it's a whole different motivation. It's a different way of satisfying their needs, wants, and desires. They value different things. One other way, reason that someone might donate different from these two? Yeah. They saved my wife. They saved my child. They saved my family member. And I'm just so grateful. I seriously want to show them how grateful I am. Where are my accounting students? Accountants? What's another reason you might donate? Taxes. Maybe you can donate at a big enough rate to save yourself money on taxes, okay? Very different than these other ways of doing it. Point, in order to satisfy the consumer, you have to understand their motivations. It's key to how we're going to market to those consumers, whether we're talking about a profit or a nonprofit organization.
I can't.
Yeah, now you come in. So firms have to identify and satisfy customer needs, wants, and desires. And darn it, those things don't stay still. They keep changing. They keep moving. So they need to do it today and continue doing it. Aunt Jemima was fine. The Indians was fine. Big Red Man was fine for 150 years, but it's no longer fine today. That's a long-term change with customers' needs, wants, and desires, but you have to stay on top of it because they change in order to satisfy them. And even if you don't want to, competition is going to force you to. Why? Because they are going to be interested in satisfying your consumers' needs, wants, and desires better than you can, better than you want to, better than you're doing. And so they start to take your customers away, you're going to start paying attention. So consumers, of course, have to be seen in the context of all these environmental factors, all the CREST factors. So marketers have to also have a customer orientation and a market orientation. What's going on at large? So again, over in marketing, they're busy people. They're doing a lot of things. Good. Now we make an additional evolution, if you will, of the concept, again, different from the textbook. This is the societal marketing concept era. This assumes that customer satisfaction should be delivered in a way that maintains or improves the consumer's and society's well-being. So it's possible for a consumer's needs, wants, and desires to be at odds with what's good for themselves, what's good for society. Somebody give me an example of a consumer's need, want, or desire that's at odds with what's good for them or society. Yes, sir? Drugs, okay? Recreational drugs, okay? I've been avoiding so far using a lot of posting about that new and growing market for recreational marijuana. Again, I'll explain after class what that is. And so we could argue that you, if you really care about society at large, maybe that's not a business you should get into. Maybe. Because it may not be seen as really good for society at large. Alcohol, another sort of thing that might fit in that category. A company engaging in production for consumers wants something that's really polluting. Muscle cars of the olden days that used to do leaded gas and pollute the atmosphere. Consumers loved it. It's not really good for them. Let's not do that anymore. So let's be societally responsible. Pollution control, smoking. Perhaps that's not the best thing to get involved in marketing today. You can imagine then that this relates to the ethics of doing business, the ethics of doing marketing. There are a lot of people, unfortunately, get press that are not ethical in business or ethical in marketing. They chafe me a little bit. Don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. In the classroom, in your personal life, in business, be responsible, be ethical. Who knows Patagonia? Patagonia, what does Patagonia sell? Clothes, outdoor clothes, mostly. It's for the outdoor folk. Anybody own any Patagonia? They're known for being socially responsible. They're known for having this idea of doing societal marketing. Patagonia's mission statement is, we're in the business to save our home planet. Whoa, that's quite a mission statement for a clothing company, yeah? This is the new corporate mission statement of the company. From difference from the previous one was that build the best product, cause no unnecessary harm, and use business to inspire and implement solutions to the environmental crisis, which I thought was a pretty good mission statement. They've shifted. Our statement is, we're in the business to save our home planet. Patagonia was led by this statement by the previous statement for over 45 years. But the company has grown into a more integrated firm with a bigger vision, and this necessitates the change of the mission statement to the current one. What are we about? What should we be doing? Should we be coming up with some great new vape cigarettes? No, we should not. Should we find a sustainable way to grow marijuana? No, it's not really our bag. It's not our thing. It's not a good way to save the planet. So environmentalism is, quote, what they do. We could jump out to their website and see their thoughts on that. Patagonia is renowned for true green steps, such as donating 1% of its revenue to environmental causes, for making fleece jackets out of recycled bottles, for going out of its way to use organic cotton, and for mostly powering its headquarters near Los Angeles with social panels, all consistent with the idea, with the mission of saving our planet, doing the right thing, not just for the consumer, but for the environment. Then we move to another era. I think we're probably still in this era for many companies, the customer relationship era. We need to have a market orientation, absolutely. But within that, we have to build relationships with our consumers. Oftentimes, you'll see that abbreviated as CRM, customer relationship management. And we do this, build these relationships, by giving our consumers memorable, special, outstanding experiences beyond just the product. And we saw that last time with this idea of Dasant, we saw a video on them, I think. So, all of this has to be worked together. It has to be integrated. It has to be synergistic. Managers have to create marketing tactics that fit well together to do these things. They have to be integrated. They have to be coordinated in their implementation. Production has to match up with the rollout of your advertising. It has to be in stores when people are ready to buy it at the price you promised it at, with the features you say you're going to have, doing what you say it's going to do. Easier said than done, but that's the way to be successful. And today, you have the opportunity of coming into a business world that exists in what I'll call here hyper-competition. Competitive advantages that you have, that you create your business on, simply do not last. Customer satisfaction and competition requires innovation, cost advantages, and quality enhancements. Have you heard this term of the Whitewater Rapids environment of business? Who's been Whitewater Rapids-ing? You know what I'm saying. Who's done that? It's crazy, man. You're trying to go this way and this way, and then there's a little calm, and then there's more of this crazy stuff. This is your life will be in business. Your business environment is going to lack stability. It's going to lack predictability. It's going to require that managers and organizations continually adapt to change, to actively survive. Antenna up. What's going on with your consumers? What's going on with the competition? What's going on with those crest factors? What's going on with your product, your production, your pricing? and it's going to change quickly. And companies that don't change go away. Competition overwhelms them, consumers leaves them. Now, the good news is that if your antenna are up, if you're paying attention, if you're doing your good research, these changes create new market segments that have new needs. But it's exhausting, keeping track of what's going on. The term that you may hear is business agility, in our course, marketing agility. Marketing agility is this ability to act quickly and efficiently to act upon those consumer insights. When I say marketing research for action, that's the idea. Consumer insights, what can we do to satisfy the need, wants, and desires of those consumers quickly and effectively and efficiently? It involves balancing chaos and order, ambiguity and speedy decision-making, and short and long-term plans. Again, exhausting. We're very busy, thank you. All of this requires cross-functional decision-making teams. These are groups consisting of people from different functional areas of the company: marketing, product, sales, customer, all of these have to, customer success, all have to work on a common goal of satisfying the consumer. It's an integrated effort of the firm. How many of you guys have been in the real world of business so far? Had a job, real job, couple of us. Well, if you've had a job where there are different departments or different areas, you know, it's hard enough to work with your own people in your own area. Now I'm saying to you, that's not good enough. Not only do you have to work with your own people in your own area, you have to have cross-functional teams across the organization. That's not done at the low level. That's commanded from on high and has to be enforced to be successful. All right, so let's think a little bit about the breadth and the depth of marketing. Let's ask ourselves, who markets? Well, you tell me somebody that doesn't market. I'd be interested in knowing about that. Manufacturers market, retailers market, service providers market, not-for-profit organizations market, government markets, and of course, you market yourself. Whether it's to get that new job, to get that new promotion, to present that great idea you have, or in the world of dating, you market yourself to the needs, wants, and desires of that person you're interested in serving. So there's actually content out there, how to market yourself in various environments. That would be a link to one such source. So marketing is everywhere, done by everyone. What's marketed? Well, products, yeah, physical goods, of course, and services, obvious, and ideas. We market ideas, and places, and people. All of these things are marketed.
No goodness.
So in this next little segment, if you have your lecture notes, whatever, pay attention to what's being marketed, who's doing the marketing, and who they're marketing to. So let's see about how this tells us a little bit about the breadth and the depth of marketing.
No goodness, Gareth.
So much.
Now there's new Define a Lash from Maybelline, New York. Our first country that's longer, sexier, defined like never before.
Tell me more.
Only our flexible brush is shaped to the lash. Only our formula guarantees zero clumps.
Define a Lash.
Now every lash is separated, elongated,
perfectly defined.
New Define a Lash. The club-free look that's sexier, more refined.
Clean water for the village, but there are several villages nearby that could use our new system.
Introducing GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Simple, high-definition group video conferencing that will change the way you work. And perhaps a whole lot more. Visit GoToMeeting.com and sign up for your free 30-day trial.
How many letters?
5 letters.
Just thinking about what am I doing right now.
Hello?
This is so busy.
Texas travel information, go to TravelTex.com or call 1-800-888-TEXT.
What is this election about? It's about the people who built this country. What's Biden done for working families? Nothing. Sold us out with NAFTA, now weakly selling us out with China. Trump? Say what you want, but he has our backs. Increased our take-home pay, gave us better trade deals, playing hardball with China, bringing jobs back home. Trump? He's put American workers first.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
The chief actuary of the Social Security Administration just released an analysis of Trump's planned cuts to Social Security. Under Trump's plan, Social Security would become permanently depleted by the middle of calendar year 2023. If Trump gets his way, Social Security benefits will run out in just 3 years from now. Don't let it happen. Joe Biden will protect Social Security.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Politically speaking, we cover both sides, so it's fair to everybody. Tell me now, from your notes, an example of what was marketed, who was doing the marketing to whom. Yeah. Maybelline, which is a product, service, idea, place, person. It's a product. Maybelline Beauty products to consumers. One example. What else you got for me? Yeah, GoToMeeting, and what is that? Product, service, person, place, idea, service. And that was B2B. I don't know if it came across. So business to business of a service doing marketing. One other thing. Yeah. Yeah, so the intent, I understand exactly what you're saying, these aren't pure, was to give an example of marketing the person, Trump versus Biden, but in the context exactly right of these government services that they were talking about. So I was pushing for the person, but I can't argue, if it were a test question, that that would also include government services in the ads. What was the idea being marketed? The one clear idea, yeah? Don't text and drive. Hopefully that you don't do that anyhow, and it gets your attention at an emotional level. And and then the place, right? Texas, presumably by the Better Business Bureau. All right, so it is everywhere. All these different sort of organizations and entities and businesses marketing to consumers, marketing to businesses, a variety of different things. So, okay. So here we go. Manufacturing Maybelline product to consumers, provider, resume the manufacture of the service, go to meeting to business, public service announcement, marketing an idea, B2C, or maybe government to consumer, tourism with Texas, marketing a place, either it's business to consumer or government to consumer, I didn't suss that out, and the people and the ideas, the political candidates, probably government to consumers. All right, who buys? Well, on the one hand, businesses buy, organizations buy. We call that B2B, so you hear me say B2B a lot, shorthand for business to business. And, of course, the ultimate consumer, you guys, buy. So that's B2C. What's the big difference? You are not buying to make a profit. If you are, then you're a business. you're buying to satisfy your own needs, wants, and desires. And why do we buy? Why do people buy? Well, people buy to get value. They buy because they get benefits. Who remembers the word utility from microecon? Utility, okay? We get utility or value from our purchases, and marketers are helping to provide that utility or that value. So marketing creates utility. Utility is the satisfaction, value, or usefulness that a user receives from a good or a service, as you recall from microecon. One type of utility is form utility. Who likes, not necessarily today, ice cream? Ice cream. Who's made ice cream at home? You've made it at home. Can you tell me a little bit about how to make ice cream at home? Because you're close and I can hear you. In a plastic bag or an ice cream machine. So the ice cream machine is an electric version of what you can't have as a hand crank thing. So what do you do with the machine? What do you have to do?
You put the cream,
sugar,
milk.
And
if you want any flavors or other items too.
Flavoring, okay? And you can put it in a machine and... Or in the old days, or some people still like to do it that. That's really convenient. So you'd like ice cream now. When's it ready? From start to finish, 2 hours. I don't want to wait 2 hours for some ice cream. I'd like some ice cream right now. So Ben and Jerry's turns cream, sugar, milk, flavoring into ice creams for us. Is that worth not having to wait 2 hours and do all that messing around? You bet it is. I'll pay some money for that. They provide form utility. Place utility. How many guys, again, it's been a long time since I had little kids, had ice cream trucks in the neighborhood driving around? Okay, here comes my ice cream truck. Here comes you missed the ice cream truck. Place utility is the idea of having the product where you want it. How many coffee drinkers do we have? Where's your coffee come from? Not retail, but sourced. Where's your coffee from? Country?
Brazil,
okay. Did you have to go to Brazil today to get your, you didn't. Well, how in the world did you get your coffee? Someone sourced it in Brazil, a supply chain, we've been talking about supply chain problems, haven't we? Brings it out, it gets manufactured, it gets put into nice little packages, and you go down to your local store to get your bag of coffee or your local retail store to get a cup of coffee. How would you like to have to run around getting everything at its source? Of course, it's insane. You couldn't do that. Are you willing to pay some money to have place utility, the thing where you want it? Yes, you are. Market has helped to provide that. Thank you. Time utility. Not only don't I want to wait 2 hours for you to make the darn ice cream, I want it now, and now is 2 a.m. I was doing some recreational drugs, I'm now hungry for ice cream, and I want somebody to go drive to the store, because of course I wouldn't drive if I was doing legal recreational drugs, to the store. So your Walmart Supercenter, open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, you can get your ice cream anytime you want it. Is that worth something? Again, you bet it is. So where are my fashion students? Fashion students, when are we making swimsuits for summer? When are we making those? Winter, sort of nowish, if the supply chain is working the way it's supposed to. So do you want to go buy your swimsuit? We're making them now. You want to buy them now? Most people don't. What do they want? They want them made, stored, advertised, and then in the store as you're thinking about the summer. I don't want to have to buy it today. Who knows how fat I'll be then? And store it until the summer. So we provide time utility, making it available when you want it. And possession utility. Consumer value is created by allowing the easy transfer of a product ownership. Anybody buy their own new car of late? Yeah? Did you pay cash for that? Well, again, were you, I hear. Oh, I thought it was you know, talking to me. I can't see who's talking. Go ahead. Did you pay cash up? Cash? Wrote a check? Here it is.
I think we did I think me and my dad did a check like up front for like initial bits and then I'm still paying it.
Oh, so wait a minute. You didn't have to come up with the full price of the product. The marketer said to you, I tell you what, give me something down and I'll let you have it now before you've paid for it over time. We have helped you possess the product. We do that through time payments, leasing, credit purchases, debit card purchases. All of these things can be quite important to the consumer in making that purchase more attractive to them. How would you like to have to wait until you had all the cash in hand before somebody would sell you the car? I don't want to do that. That's crazy. So we enable possession utility. Marketers help us to do that as well. So these are the various utilities that marketing brings to the table. There's my bank card. All right. And then if you're really into it, you can read a little more about the role of the CMO. What do you suppose the CMO is? The chief marketing officer at that site if you're really excited to hear more about that person's role in the organization. So that would be the end of chapter one. And you might guess that moves us to chapter two, which fits nicely with what we've been talking about, the 30,000 foot level. So I think we're on lecture notes page 34, developing successful marketing and organizational strategies. Let's think about a company that struggled to make the appropriate changes. How many people know the name Kodak? Kodak used to be a fantastic company. Anybody from Rochester? Yeah, they were a big time player in the Rochester area, yeah? Kodak is synonymous with photography. Their print process methods were global and technologies ahead of the competition. However, the company ultimately came crashing down because it did not change its strategy with the market. Kodak invented the digital camera in 1975. What? They invented digital in 75. Even though they produced a report on their predicted future trends in the market, management decided that technology would not disrupt the market. So they didn't have to change away from print film cameras. They had 10 years to act as the market moved along, and they didn't. They lost 75% of their value before filing for bankruptcy in 2012. Poor Kodak. Anybody still doing film cameras at all? One person, you really have to like film and the richness of the product, etc. Anybody remember when every corner and every mall had a one-hour Photoshop? Yeah, gone, well, virtually gone. The whole industry shifts away. Kodak knew it was coming and chose to ignore it. Strategic planning didn't work as you would hope it would. GM, making strategic changes due to changing marketplaces, ushers in electric air with ambitious brand refresh and inclusive marketing campaign. GM's new strategy is to position the company for an all-electric future by building a multi-brand, multi-segment electric vehicle, EV, strategy with economies of scale. We talked about that just a minute ago. Reduced complexity and significant flexibility. We talked about why that's important a minute ago. To support the strategy, GM has debuted a new marketing campaign called Everybody In, meant to reflect a movement that's inclusive and accessible. The company is also evolving its brand identity as GM transforms itself to deliver on a vision that creates a world with zero crashes, zero emissions, and zero congestion. That'd be cool. They've redesigned the brand logo, featuring lower-cased letters, which you can see down here, with an underline in the M and a more vibrant blue hue to evoke clearer skies of a zero-emission future. Ads in the Everybody In campaign mirror the thematic motif of positivity as a diverse cast of narrators share lines like, "We emit optimism, not exhaust." While the Everybody In messaging will be a key part of GM's marketing, individual brands owned by the automaker will stay focused on their own outreach strategies. This is about the corporate brand and its image. Okay, well, it was there when I did it. Yeah. All right, so this is the importance of strategic planning, yeah? That famous entrepreneur and business guru, Benjamin Franklin, said, look, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. Kodak, you there? And that other very famous sage, the Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland, said, if you don't know where you want to go, then it doesn't really matter what path you take. Okay for Alice, I guess. Not good for your company. Not good for your management team. What are you going to do? I don't know. I don't know where we're going. What? So corporate strategy is used by all firms, whether we're talking about profit or not-for-profit, manufacturer of a product or a service, an entrepreneur. How many guys are entrepreneurs in the future or planning to be entrepreneurs? One, two, three, not that many. Your future awaits you. Or a global corporation. It's an organization's long-term course of action designed to deliver a unique customer experience. Ties in with what we're saying, while achieving its overall mission, its overall goals and objectives. That's what corporate strategy is all about. Within that, we have our marketing strategy, right? So marketers don't decide that we're going to acquire a how many billion dollar purchase. That's not marketers saying that. But marketers are going to have to work on how to make this integration work and successful. So marketers are involved in selecting and analyzing a target market, a group of people whose needs, wants, and desires we might be able to satisfy them, and creating and maintaining an appropriate marketing mix, product, price, place, promotion, I can say that, to deliver a unique customer experience while achieving the organization's goals, which could be profit for a profit-making organization, which could be service goals for a not-for-profit organization. We good? Cool. So whether you're a profit or not-profit organization, you need to have a strategy, as I think we've sort of begun to believe, to set your direction and to achieve your goals. Your strategy has to be based on what's going on with the consumers, what's going on with the market, what's going on with the competition, and you have to act as appropriate. We'll see this design, which I found a while ago and really like. It's a little complicated to begin with, but it's a framework for strategic marketing management. And it starts way at the top with what we're talking about, the company mission and objectives. And now we've made a quick jump down to marketing strategy. You can see we're moving down towards the consumer. But this is the idea of marketing strategy under the umbrella of the company mission, the company objectives, the company strategy. Yeah? So how does this work at the 30,000-foot level? Well, most companies are going to have boards of directors. Those boards of directors will be involved in helping to set corporate-level strategy. That will trickle down to the business unit. So corporate has decided that GM is going to be EV, electronic vehicles. And then the brands are the business unit levels. They're going to figure out how to make that work for their particular set of consumers who are in their particular model. So we get down to the functional level and their plans and what they have to do. Who's in information systems? CIS, MIS, CS, anybody? No IS people here? Okay. Finance, any finance types? You guys are helping us out too, thank you, with managing some stuff for us, research and development. Marketing, C-level, yes. SBU, strategic business unit. Here I was getting down to the departments, and then I was trying to be cute with marketing. Manufacturing or operations, and then HR are some of the key things. I guess I forgot accounting. I'm sorry, accountants, that should be in there too, right? So these functional level strategies are all going to operate under the strategic business unit level strategy, under the corporate umbrella, right? You start down here at a department, I presume. Okay, corporate, C-level, CEO, CFO, CMO, EIO, etc. Top management sets and directs the overall strategy for the firm, or fails to do a good job at it in Codex case. For entrepreneurs, how does this work for entrepreneurs? Who's at the department level or the grassroots level for an entrepreneur? Nobody knows who runs the business for the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur, who's at the top level for the entrepreneur? The entrepreneur, who's taking out the trash for the entrepreneur? The entrepreneur. So they're doing this at all levels. In most cases, they're often a small company of one or two people. The entrepreneur is running a lot of this. Maybe Tim Appel up at AAA Homes, who we've heard from a couple times, might be doing a lot of this stuff. Rob Felber over at Felber and Felber Marketing might be doing all this stuff. Gary Trinetti, who we know is the owner of, co-owner of Garrick, is at that level. Strategic business units. This is a division, a product line, or a profit center. It varies by company. For GM, it's probably their brands. Selling a distinct set of products or services to a specific target market against a set of well-defined competitors. So if our corporation is big, we might have a variety of strategic business units. Those strategic business units may have a variety of brands, a variety of products, so it can be massively complex to manage all this. So again, corporate strategy, corporate mission, corporate objectives, driving the mission and objectives of the strategic business units. Eventually gets down to the departments. So Procter & Gamble, for example, operates through six industry-based strategic business units. Where's P&G headquartered, by the way? Not Rochester. P&G headquartered, yeah. Procter & Gamble. No one knows where Procter & Gamble is headquartered. Cincinnati, Ohio. We ought to know that, perhaps, as informed people that are being educated in Ohio. They operate through six industry-based strategic business units, SBUs, fabric and home care, baby and feminine care, family care, and P&G Ventures, beauty, grooming, and health care. They manage 10 product categories within these SBUs. You can imagine then that the market, the products, the advertising for baby and feminine care is different than that for fabric and home care. Different strategic business units serving different target markets against different competitors. So these strategic business units operate in markets that have different sizes, different growth rates, different opportunities and threats, against different competition, with different profit potential. That's a lot of work to think about within an organization. How are you doing that? How are you managing it? How do you keep track of it? Busy, busy folk. So those strategic planners have to be knowledgeable about all of these in doing their planning, in figuring out how to allocate resources, and in performing evaluations. Why didn't you have the same profit as these guys over here? Because we're in a different market against different competition, selling a different product. Don't compare me to them. That's silly. It's a different strategic business unit. So what was my point here? Don Kosak, okay, so Spectrum Business, Time Warner. Time Warner has at least two, I'm sure more, major SBUs. Consumer, how many of you guys have Spectrum at home? And business. Two different, at least, strategic business units. He is over there with the business side of things. Oh, three, I should have read my next note. Residential services, business services, and media services are their three strategic business units. So now we work down to under the corporate, under the SBU, to the department level. Strategy can be made at those three different levels. So at the functional or department level. So if we're talking about marketing, in this context, what do we have to do? Given who we are and what we're doing, what our mission is at the corporate level, we have to listen to our consumers. We have to develop offerings of value to those consumers, implement those marketing programs, and evaluate the program's success. So that's sort of our role in this overall strategic planning stuff. We've got to plan at that very frontline level. Good. All right, this is just a visual for those that are visual learners. So what's going to drive our mission? Whatever our core values are. And obviously the core values of Patagonia are different than the core values of Juul. What's Juul make and sell? Vapes, okay? They have different interests at their heart. They have different core values, okay? I'm not judging, I'm just saying they're different. What are your core values? That's going to help drive your mission, your vision, which in turn, we've made the point by now, will drive the strategic business unit goals, the marketing strategy, the marketing plan, the marketing goals. So that's another way of thinking about this whole strategic planning set of processes. So your core values have to drive your mission and your goals and your plans all the way through the organization. So the mission statement itself, it should be a clear and succinct representation of the enterprise's purpose for existence, why it's there. It should incorporate criteria to address concepts such as the moral and ethical position of the enterprise, which we saw with Patagonia, the public image you want, your target market, your products or services, the geographic domain, and expectations for growth and profitability. Not every mission statement will have all of these, but you certainly should have some of these. The intent of the mission statement should be the first consideration of any employee who's evaluating a strategic decision. Again, anybody work for a company that had a mission at all, ever? Yeah. Did they by any chance print their mission on a little card that they gave to you? Is that something they did? Mission statement. Okay, so they didn't put it on a little card, but it's plastic. It's on their beer cans. Okay. Well, there you go. That's part of their value, part of their mission, and it's on their beer cans. That's very good. And I'm sure it says, don't drink and drive. What's my point? So we have our mission, and we want to propagate it through the employees, and we want it to be taken seriously, whether or not, I don't know, it is in your organization. Sometimes people scoff at the thing on the wall. They scoff at the card. Not good. Not good management. Not a good way to get things done. Not a good way to drive success towards your core mission. So if I'm Patagonia and I go to Patagonia and say, I have a great idea, you're going to love this idea. Our consumers want to be able to climb rock cliffs easier. I have a great idea for a jet-powered piton that you smack once, it drives into the rock face, and you hook your hook on it, and you climb up these pitons. It's fantastic. Of course, it ruins the rock face pretty well. But your consumers would love it. And what would you expect Patagonia to say? It might be a great product. It's not something we want to get involved in. No, it's not the intent of our mission. Don't do that thing. So it should be the consideration for people thinking about it. So now we're at the top, thinking about that company, the mission, the objectives, driven by the core, driving our strategy. So now we do back up to Timken again. We're going to hear him talk about his changing mission at Timken over time. Let's see how this works.
It's a fairly recent vision. Going back even 10 years, our mission vision was worldwide leader in bearings and steel. Okay, so it kind of put us into a box of bearings and steel in terms of what we could do and where we could expand into. And our new mission vision is improving customer performance. And what that allows us to do is think outside of the box in terms of whether it's service or product. What can we offer the customer that will improve their customer performance? And so that has led to an expansion of our product line and our service capabilities just in the last 10 years that, you know, 109 years ago at the beginning of the Timken Company would have never dreamed we would tackle. The one thing that's interesting about that is we've also amended that vision to say we will provide value for those customers that are willing to pay for the value we create. And what that does, it looks out for the shareholder and says that, you know, we are not going to enter industries and service customers that where the value proposition is all about reducing cost of our product, because we found those industries and those customers, we don't earn a return on our capital. And so in the main, we focus now on those customers and industries that are willing to, the way we put it, pay for the value we create.
I digress just for 1 minute to say they shouldn't let old people like me teach. I forgot to hit record again, despite the fact that my tech team told me to hit record, and I told my wife I would hit record. I got to go home and do all this again for a second time. Everyone in this room has responsibility next time. Before I start lecturing, ask me, did you hit record? Perhaps I'll edit this out. I can't believe it. So I actually was teaching executive MBAs when this transition occurred. And one of the executive MBAs said to me, I don't understand Timken. We've been buying berries from them for a number of years, and all of a sudden, they're not interested in marketing to us anymore. They're not really talking to us anymore. And I don't understand it. I said, well, how do you think about their product? Is it a commodity or something you truly value? And they said, well, it's a commodity. And I said, Timken's no longer really interested in doing you. You don't value their product. So I think if we said 100 years ago is the worst mission statement you've ever heard of, being the worldwide leader in bearing and steel, the worst thing ever, I will let you out at 5 o'clock. I will let you out on the dot. My clock is running right here. That I won't forget. 3 more minutes. I won't hold you over. And so you would not have said to me that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of, but it puts you in a box and you're focused on what? The product, not your consumer. So they actually made a strategic switch. They said, we're going to focus on consumer. We're going to think about improving customer performance for people willing to pay. Remember, this is at a profit. And this switch, of course, since we're talking about it, was quite successful with them, helped them quite a bit. This is Valerie. Valerie sells health services to government agencies.
Our mission is to provide healthcare and human capital consulting to veterans, service members, and their families. That is our core mission. That is all we do. So if a business opportunity is not in the area of healthcare or human capital, which is benefits for this target market, we don't do it. So what that means is, let's say we're in the market, we're doing this relationship selling where we're talking to our clients and saying, what do you need? What do you need? And they say, hey, we really need an IT system that helps us process data faster. We won't do it because that is not in our mission. That is not in our core target area. That is what we do. We provide healthcare and human capital for these areas. We don't do it if it's not in that area.
And I guarantee you, sometime with the company you work with, they're going to accept something that's outside their mission. They're going to say, oh, IT, we'll do IT. And then they're going to go back and say, how are we going to do IT? We don't know how to do IT. Should she simply say no to this customer? She shouldn't say that. She should say, you need good IT. I know a company that can help you. All right, even though it's only, you have one more minute. I don't know what your clock says, but I'll let you go because I got to go home and re-record all of this. Bye. Unbelievable.